pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Wednesday morning, 251-343-0106. You want to be in touch with the show? All you do is text me. Coming up on the program this morning, here in about a half hour, Andrew Sorrell, our state auditor, will make time for us. Let's talk about flock cameras and some other things. We'll talk about the politics of the day, so make sure you stay tuned for that. Also on the program, Joey Clark from News Talk 93.1. We talk every Wednesday. We'll hear from him and kind of get a big picture look at. So Joey's called this week. I didn't think it was very, very smart of Doug Jones to do this, but kind of took a jab at Tommy Tuberville. Not because he's Tommy Tuberville, or in his mind, right-wing nut job Tommy Tuberville, but because he was the Auburn coach in most people in the state like Alabama. Which, you know, that's true. But why what, you know, there is a component here of there's a component here of you're going to alienate a handful of people. Why do that? Don't do that. But Joey wrote a column about that. We'll get into that in the 10 o'clock hour. The 11 o'clock hour, Alan Mendenhall, he's kind of become a regular here on the program from Heritage. We'll talk to him just about what's going on. I think some of the freedom issues right now. You know, the other thing is economics. These big kind of big picture things, especially with gas prices, oil prices, and what we think needs to be the standard here. So we're going to get into that in the 11 o'clock hour. 251-343-0106. If you want to be in touch with the program, all you do is text me. We'll do our best to respond to whatever it is that may be on your mind. We'll kick it off here. Some politics. The continue to hear kind of a lot of buzz about Rhett Marcus versus Shamari Figures. Now, not something we have to be terribly concerned about in the first congressional district since the lines have been redrawn. I was thinking about this, and this was sort of a couple of unthinkable theories here. What if Democrats do well in Alabama? It's unlikely. I don't think it's probable. I give it low, low odds, but stranger things have happened. Let's start with AL2. What if Shamari Figures beats Rhett Marcus? Well, it's a loss for Republicans. It's a bad look for Republicans. And my guess is that that happens. It's going to be a bad night for Republicans across the board. But here's the thing. If Shamari Figures wins, that whole argument that we litigated in court, that we adjudicated, about the 2023 map being racist, about it not meeting Anna Manasco's, the federal judge's standard. Turns out it's going to be, it's going to be an even worse look for her in that three-judge panel that was slapped down by the Supreme Court. Not just struck down, but slapped down. Like overturned with a profound implication for a lot of people around the country. And the argument there when the map, when the legislature drew the map in 2023, this isn't good enough. It's racist. You guys in your backwoods Alabama legislature, you're not doing what we told you, and we know better than you. And then if, like, by some odd happenstance, Shamari Figures wins, and what is the, it just continues to show the lapse in judgment. From that court, that three-judge panel. But, you know, I don't know what it means for Rhett Marcus. He's been struggling ever since getting in this congressional game. I don't think he was a particularly great candidate in AL1. I have not been tracking AL2. He won this primary, but he did not have staunch opposition. I was asked by a very high-ranking Republican, well, what would you tell him to do different? And it's like, don't be scared. I don't know what you're afraid of. But it comes off that they're sort of running away from the situation. Whenever there's he did stand for a debate when it was a crowded field here in AL1, but there's not been a lot of interaction with the media. And I don't know. I think there's a little bit to be desired there. And like, what's the message here? Okay, so when you were running in AL2, Representative Marcus, you were from Baldwin County. You went to Fairhope High. You lived at Spanish Fort. Now you've got to go figure out a way to take a campaign that was trying to sell you as a Baldwin Countyan and somehow figure out how to capture enough votes in Montgomery and Wetumpka, or the most populated part of the district. What is that going to look like? And just talking to the Republicans in Montgomery, they have no idea. But, I still think he's the favorite. I don't know. General election, it's hard to tell. Here's the problem with all these polls we're seeing. We haven't seen a lot of them, but we talked about this with Sam Roberts yesterday. No one knows what the likely voter on November 3rd is going to be. We can't dial that in. Will it be high turnout, low turnout? It's not even like an enthusiasm like pom-poms on, yay, Republican. It's, do I even care enough to go do this? And my perception is Democrats care a little bit more than Republicans, but there are like 2 to 3 times as many Republicans as Democrats. Is that enthusiasm? Is there enough there in some places in Alabama to win a seat or two? And I think that there is. The other race we've been talking about a lot, Tommy Tuberville, Doug Jones. What would a Doug Jones governorship look like? Now, we've had divided government before in this state. We've had, Bob Riley, Bob James, Guy Hunt as Republican governors and Democrat-controlled legislature, with the unfathomable, the Democrat governor and the Republican legislature. Is there going to be a lot of cooperation there? I don't know. Is Doug Jones, whose brand went from the aw-shucks kind of moderate old-school Democrat to just like defiantly anti-Trumpism and, everything that Trump does is dumb, including the National Guard. Could he work with a Republican-controlled legislature if he were governor? Now, what he'd probably have going for him is that there's a good number of old ex-Democrats serving in the legislature, including the Speaker of the House. Now, they think they're going to go out fishing together or whatever. Well, I don't know, but I some of the social issue stuff goes away. That stuff's never going to get passed with a Democrat governor. But I bet you, like, in general, the big picture stuff, maybe plus up education funding, you get some more gambling because that's all we need in Alabama. What does Doug Jones, Governor Doug Jones, look like? And this is just a philosophical exercise. I don't think it's going to happen. But for the sake of talk radio, what would that even be like? He's got like some bullet points and he'll talk about policy. But envision it. We get to January or whatever, Inauguration Day, and somehow or another he's governor. What does his cabinet even look like? Who's in his cabinet? What, you know, does the AEA, obviously we'll celebrate that. Do they make a resurgence? David Bronner and the RSA guys, they're head over heels. Because the governor has a lot of power. As we have seen, as Governor Ivey has shown us, you don't necessarily need to get the legislature's approval to do some big, big things. You know, I mean, apparently, if she had wanted to, if she were able to, she could have done the prison deal without the legislature at some point. She could build a highway through the middle of West Alabama with no legislative approval. Now, the credit cards are going to be maxed out. Whoever the next governor is, if it's Tommy Tuberville or Doug Jones, is not going to have a whole lot of a ceiling there to do a big, big initiatives. However, I think it's something that is going to, it's just something to think about if the unthinkable were to happen. Because we've had divided government, but never the other way around. Doug Jones wins the governor's seat in Alabama, the country's going to have bigger problems. Probably a lot of you are going to be looking at Congress. It will be a wave election. It will be impeachments. These heated show trial congressional inquiries that never amount to much. And the breathless media. And this will probably be true in a lot of other states, if that's the trend. Like, if the polls just totally blow it. They just totally, totally miss it. But, you know, you just look at demographics and you base it on historical data. And it's hard to say. My thinking here on this gubernatorial election, yes, there's probably a 10-point gap. You know, some polling showed 7. But Coach Tuberville hasn't really done the campaigning. It doesn't feel like he's turned on the gubernatorial campaign machine. I don't know what he's waiting for. Start spending some of that money. Start spending some of that war chest. Because to have a mandate to do what you need to do, to have that vote of confidence from the public, probably needs to be 15 points or more. 251-343-0106. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Boers Show on FM Talk 106.5. To the Jeff Boers Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Wednesday morning. Squirrel Vereen writes, Doug Jones winning isn't unthinkable since he has all those doofuses supporting him. I better not see non-voting so-called patriots complain. And just there's a couple of problems here. You know, if the election had been held on May 19th, he would have won. So, I you know, voting behavior in Alabama is a tough nut to crack. It's hard to understand why people don't participate more in primaries, especially with all of the money and all of the flyers and all of the signs. People know there's an election, okay? It for some reason, it doesn't, but they will sometimes show up in bigger numbers for a general election than the midterms. That's true. Is that true this cycle? I'm saving my vote for when it really counts. It seems to be kind of a conventional wisdom. Now look, the May 19th event came just days after the Supreme Court ruled on Alabama's redistricting. Democrats really, really put that they had some big names come in and campaign. So, you know, was there something going on there with that? And the question I had at the time was, okay, well, it's May. Well, this level of enthusiasm, which was sky high in Democrat, relative to Democrat Party circles, could they maintain it to November 3rd? But now we don't know. Because, you know, the theory here is you win the Republican nomination, you're gonna cruise in November. Mike, I think your Doug Jones is within 10 points. It's going to be a national wave election for Democrats. I think that Tommy Tuberville could do a little bit more here, though. Now, they built a big war chest. You want a meeting with Coach, and you're one of the players in this state, you know, you're encouraged. The calendar clears up when you're able to make a campaign contribution. And they have sucked a lot of the money out of the politics. You talk to lawmakers, and they will tell you kind of, hey, yeah, everybody I'm hitting up for campaign donations, they've maxed out to Tuberville. Or well, not maxed out, because you'll do that but they hit their bar, they hit their spending limit on political campaigns, and they're tapped out. So he's taking a lot of the money out. That's a fact. He needs, you know, put it. What does that even look like? More signs. I don't know. More TV commercials. Whatever. Get up on air. You know, look at these third parties. Groups need to attack Doug Jones for this 2017 abortion comments and some of the stuff he said about Donald Trump. He's been on cable news since he lost in 2020. I'm sure there's a lot there. But it feels a little dormant right now. And it's September 2nd. I guess, you know, you really look at after Labor Day. So this time a week from now, maybe they fire the old war machine up. But, I agree. I mean, 10 points is you know, not a comfort zone within 10 points. Thank you, Jeff. You told me why I should not vote for Tuberville. He really doesn't care about the average person in Alabama. I think he does. I can't get to sleep at night. I just think about how he's going about the campaign is not a reflection of that, but a signal that you want to build up some political capital, and having a big election win is going to do that. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5. Take me home.
Living on the road, my friend, was gonna keep you free.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thank you for being with us on this Wednesday morning. 251-343-0106. You need to be in touch with the show. What you got to do, you got to text me, and we'll do our best to respond to whatever it is that's on your mind. Coming up in about an hour, Joey Clark from News Talk 93.1 in Montgomery. And then at 11 o'clock hour, Alan Mendenhall from the Heritage Foundation. So stick around for that. Joining us now, he is our state auditor. Always a pleasure. Andrew Sorrell joins us on the line. Andrew, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing great. It's great to be back on with you.
Hey, thanks for making time. So we're going to talk about a little bit about this morning. And Dick Brubaker and I talked about it, I guess, last week. He doesn't think it's a given that Tuberville's going to win. I kind of do. But there does seem to be, I don't know, the big unknown here is what is a likely voter on November 3rd. And there's a national sort of mood against Republicans, I think. It's always going to be there in these kind of midterm cycles. Maybe not as bad as George W. Bush, but it's there. What's your sense of things as we head into November? And, you know, I still think Republicans will probably win, but maybe not by the margins we expect.
Yeah, so let me preface all my comments by saying Tommy Tuberville is going to be our next governor, and I voted for Tommy Tuberville every time he's ever been on the ballot. I'm a big Tommy Tuberville fan, so I'll, don't take anything I'm saying as negative towards Tommy Tuberville or his campaign. I want him to win. I believe he'll win. But realistically, painting a picture here, you know, Donald Trump's 19 points upside down on his favorability ratings. We've got an unpopular war with Iran that's continuing to go on. We thought we had the thing won 4 or 5 times, and now, you know, they just refuse to quit fighting. They're trying to do the war of attrition kind of thing, and now we're over there. We changed our strategy. We're going to try to beat them economically and bring them to their knees that way, choke off their oil pipeline. And you know, I hear they have 66% inflation. Some Donald Trump's saying 300%, but the official numbers are 66% inflation in the country right now. Anyway, that's continuing to drag on. Gas prices are high. Diesel's $5.35 a gallon. There's all kinds of problems right now, and people are just unhappy. And you couple that with the fact that the party in power typically loses seats in the midterms. We're going to be really, really fortunate if we maintain control of one of the two houses of Congress. I think the Senate's more likely that we'll keep that one than the House. And, you know, Alabama may even play a role in that. Congressional District 2, if we can pick that seat back up, who knows that we might be the deciding vote on a very, very tight House. So, yes, I'm concerned. The generic ballot we're losing, the swing state polling we're losing, and how much of that is going to bleed down here into Alabama? Well, let's talk about some Alabama polling that's come out. There was a poll put out by a school choice group. So again, this is, you know, school choice. These are not Democrat pollsters running the school choice group. I mean, this is, you would think, assume a conservative pollster ran this poll, and it was Tuberville up 49-41 over Doug Jones. How in the world are we in single digits, high single digits, but still single digits? Last time you had Doug Jones and Tommy Tuberville on a ballot, we waxed them by 20 points. And I think it's very important that we not only win this election as statewide candidates, we need to not just win, we need to dominate. I don't want to see any statewide candidate with a 5 on their number, right? 58, 59. I'll tell you this, way back in 2014 in House District 3, I watched the Republican get up over 40% for the first time. It's like 40.1 or 40.2%. His name was Fred Joe Lee. And as a young guy, I think I was about 27, 28 years old at the time. I remember thinking that seat's going to be winnable in 2018 because I saw a Republican get a 4, you know, 40 point something percent. If he'd gotten 39.7, I'm not sure the thought ever would have crossed my mind that I should run for that seat in 2018. I'm not sure I would have believed it was winnable. It's a psychological thing. We don't need the Democrats to start getting 41, 42, 43%. Yes, okay, if Doug Jones loses 55-45, we get the W, right? But 4 years from now, we're in trouble. Now we're going to other parts of the country, George Soros is going to look at Alabama like we're Georgia and think, man, if I pour enough money in here, we can pick off some seats. Democrats poured $3 million into the Georgia Public Service Commission races and flipped 2 of the seats. We need to dominate this election cycle so that the Democrats no longer think they have a chance in Alabama. I want to go back to like 2022, where they didn't even bother to field a full slate of candidates. I had no Democrat opponent in 2022. When I won my runoff in June of 2022, the race was over. I just had to wait 7 months for the inauguration. This time I've got an opponent. And the Democrats have fielded quality opponents all the way across the statewide slate. Doug Jones, former Ag Commissioner Ron Sparks is now running. You got former Republican Attorney General Troy King pulling a bonehead move and coming out and endorsing Ron Sparks for governor, endorsing a Democrat. What is happening in our state? You've got a pretty credible guy running for lieutenant governor against John Wall. Philip Ensler is a talented politician. He carried that popular doghouse bill last session. He's a state representative. This is not the Will Boyd for lieutenant governor campaign. This is not Yolanda Flowers for governor. Right.
Yeah. Correct. Well, so the question is, what's an acceptable number? Because what you want, ideally, I think if you're Tommy Tuberville, is a mandate, right? You want a Kay Ivey level mandate. Now, you're not going to get that 40-point win or whatever she had 4 years ago, but because the quality of the opponent, I think 15, 20 points is desirable, because you want to make sure that, you know, people know in this state, hey, he didn't just squeak it out. This is what the people said when they voted for him. It is clear. He has a clear policy prescription. This is a mandate. This isn't squeaking it out by some thin margin.
Yeah, and for that, you've got to be in the upper 50s. You've got to be at least 57-58% to really claim the mandate. And, you know, look, could we get away with it? If Tommy Tuberville wins 57-43 and then the rest of the statewides get 60-61, that's not a bad result. But I'm telling you, if all the statewides start getting 56-57, heaven forbid Ron Sparks overperforms and gets 46-47 against Corey Hill, something like that, we're going to pay for our mistakes in future election cycles. And the Democrats are going to start being able to raise more money. There are donors in this state who honestly are somewhat ambivalent to who's in power. They just want to have access to the people who are in power. And I hate to say it, but that's how it works. Some donors will donate to either side. A lot of the associations in Montgomery will donate to either side. A lot of the money flows to the Republican side because we are winning right now. You throw that into jeopardy, and all of a sudden the money starts going the other way. There is a group in Montgomery. I'm not going to throw them under the bus and name them right now, but there were two swing districts on the ballot in 2022 for the state legislature. In both of them, we legitimately, neither side knew which candidate was going to win. This group funded the Democrats both times. And they kind of show you where they really actually stand and who they actually want to win. Now, in all the other races, they funded the Republicans because they knew the Republican was going to win. But in the swing districts, they swapped and funded the Democrats. That's what we risk if the Democrats start getting 45-46%.
Yeah, because you're right. There's a sign of life here. There's any kind of pulse. A lot of these big mules, or whatever you want to call them, like you said, they're more interested in backing the winner, betting on the winning horse, but they're probably more ideologically aligned with a Democrat who's going to try to give them what they want, especially in a political circumstance where, you know, Democrats aren't raising a lot of money right now, and you want to make these people happy. So here we are.
Well, and two reasons Democrats can't raise money is because, number one, the money's flowing our way because we're winning. And number two, the Democrats' quality of candidates has been terrible. The last 10 years, they fielded really, really bad candidates. And that's no longer the case. A legitimate candidate is not going to run for a race they don't think they can win. You know, only the crazy people throw their name on the ballot, right? When they get blown out 70-30, but they still think they have a shot. Those tend to be your less serious candidates. But you start showing statewide Democrats getting 45%, all of a sudden, every candidate is Doug Jones quality or higher. And Doug Jones can raise money, and he's credible, and he could pull money in from out of state. That's another factor we got to consider, is how much out-of-state money comes into Alabama, not just the in-state groups flipping and the in-state donors. There will be out-of-state money that will flow in. So I'm not trying to depress your listeners right now, but I am trying to paint a realistic picture of what we're looking at. I think it's very, very important that we get 60%. And I would love it. If Tuberville gets 60, we're golden. We're gold. Because if we can get 60 in a year where the Democrats are supposed to do good, that will really crush them. And the next 10 years, I don't think we have anything to worry about as a Republican Party in Alabama. But I've watched Georgia slowly slip away. And now, like over in Georgia, if they win the governor's race 53-47, that's a big win for them. We just can't let that happen here.
Well, tell me this. And I think what's happened in Atlanta over the last 10, 15 years is probably what's kind of happening in Madison County. I think we're going to look at November 3rd and things will go probably as we expect, except there. It's going to change there. That's a changing demographic. We don't know. But it wouldn't surprise me to see a legislative seat or two go to the Democrats in this cycle.
You know, you're exactly right. I'm particularly worried about Senate District 2. You've got Tom Butler, who's retiring. Tom's a friend of mine. You know, Tom swapped parties, I don't remember, 10, 15 years ago, was a Democrat for many years, was still getting a lot of votes from moderates, you might say, in the general election. He's been able to keep that seat for us. I'm not sure we hang on to that seat this time, even though the young man running, John Roberts, very good candidate, very, very hard worker. Don't agree with all of his policies, but as far as a candidate, he is a high-level, high-quality candidate. Same thing in House District 10. This is a seat we lost in a special election to Maryland Lands. After the Republican incumbent got removed by the Ethics Commission, he ended up resigning because he didn't actually live in the district. Right? He lied about where he lived and got elected. Gets removed. There's a special election, and Maryland Lands beats us. Well, now we have a young man named Aaron Thomas, the owner of Donato's Pizza here in Madison, and Aaron is running to try to reclaim House District 10. Aaron, again, fantastic candidate. Couldn't ask for a better candidate than Aaron. But is there enough juice? How many people have moved in from Northern Virginia and California? And those votes, I'm telling you, these are not our people. They're bringing their politics with them. Are we going to be able to get that seat back? I don't know. And I remember in 2018 when I won, when I flipped a seat from Democrat to Republican, I was one of five House District pickups we had that year. 2022, we picked up one and we lost one, so we stayed even. Then we lost one seat in a special, the one I just talked about, the Maryland Lands House District 10 race. So now we're down to 76 Republicans in the House instead of 77. Might we end at 74 or 75 in a bad year? It's possible. Might we lose one or two senators in Madison? Heaven forbid we lose the Sam Gavan seat as well. That'd be terrible. Sam's one of our best voters. But it could happen. We could lose two senators and two or three House seats in Alabama this year if we're not careful. I believe that's true.
Let me say this, you know, my concern, my hope is this. We get past Labor Day. I think there's a lot of that the Tuberville, the top of the ticket, can do here. And I don't think they're doing a whole lot right now. They're not, I mean, sure, speaking to a few Republican groups and some Chamber of Commerce events and, you know, doing the media circuit. But what we need, they need to start going after Doug Jones. And they need to, you know, just kind of sell Tommy Tuberville a little bit better, I think. And once they start doing that, these numbers probably will improve.
Here's the good news. They've got $10 million. So if you're worried about your campaign, well, maybe you're underperforming a little bit and you got $10 million, that's a real good place to start. And there's plenty of low-hanging fruit to attack Doug Jones on. People forget just how liberal Doug Jones is. You know, it's really sad. Doug Jones is literally the reason that we still have Obamacare in America. We had the votes to repeal it in the United States Senate. I believe it had already passed the House. They sent it over to the Senate, and Alabama elected Doug Jones instead of Roy Moore in the 2017 that December special election for U.S. Senate. And then we failed to repeal Obamacare by one vote in the United States Senate. Doug Jones is the reason we still have Obamacare. That needs to be brought out and highlighted. Doug Jones wants boys playing on your girls' softball team. That needs to be brought out and highlighted. There's plenty of – Doug Jones actually has a voting record, and it's very liberal. And that's a gift to Tommy Tuberville. And look, I think you're right. You don't want to start burning your ammo too soon. We are still – what are we? Nine weeks or so out from the election? Yeah, something like that. Anyway, there's plenty of time to get the message out about who Doug Jones is and what he actually stands for and believes. And I do think a 60-40 win is possible if Tuberville messages properly. Again, not trying to say anything negative about the man at all. I love him. I'm voting for him. But some of the things he's talking about are 80-20 issues the other way. Right? Flock cameras and data centers, those are not good issues to be talking about if you're trying to get to 60%.
No.
It is not. He's
there. Yeah. The fact that you're taking such a stranded position, I mean, there's a little arrogance there, but – anyway, while I got you, just a couple more minutes here before I let you go, but the flock camera issue, what do you make of it? It's kind of, it seems to have taken a lot of the air out of the data center movement, but the flock cameras, where are you on it?
You know, I've been against these cameras since I got elected to legislature. I actually had a bill to get rid of red light traffic cameras. I think those are even unconstitutional. Way back in 2019, I introduced that bill. Senator Arthur Orr had a flock bill in 2021. Nobody cared. Nobody was talking about these issues years ago. I'm not exactly sure what made this issue bubble up so recently, but I'm glad it has, because we are being flocked to death. I go to church in Decatur. I own a business in Decatur. There's 40 flock cameras in Decatur. They are unconstitutionally tracking my every movement as I move about the city. I'm not under suspicion of any crime, but my license plate and my location are being recorded into a database. They're tracking the Bluetooth on my phone so they know where I'm at. And I don't believe it's constitutional. You have a right to be secure in your person under the Fourth Amendment. Searches require warrants. There's probable cause. There's no probable cause. They're tracking everybody, whether you're guilty of anything or not. They're tracking you. And the law enforcement argument does not hold water. Look, we could catch a lot more bad guys if we didn't have a constitution, right? If the cops were just suspicious somebody was doing something, they could just go in and search their home. Well, that's unconstitutional. Well, you got to get a warrant to go in somebody's home.
What is the expectation of privacy here? Because this is, I think if we don't want our government doing this, that's your recourse. You tell them, no, I pay taxes, don't do this. But the Fourth Amendment thing has always been kind of weak to me, because you don't have an expectation of privacy. Now, maybe tracking, you know, do they create a database? Does that get into the Fourth Amendment question? But if I, Jeff Poore, put up a camera in my front yard to track license plates, there's no expectation of privacy if you're driving around, if I'm doing it on my private property.
You are 100% correct. Let me tell you where it crosses the line. Because if you go out and somebody takes a picture of you in public, there is no expectation of privacy. I have cameras at all my businesses. But you know what I'm not doing? I'm not creating a, quote, mosaic. And that's the whole Chatry case before the United States Supreme Court. They ruled that if you're creating a mosaic, that was a case dealing with people's geolocations. They were geofencing them. And if you're repeatedly tracking the same person and tracking their movements and their whereabouts and creating a, quote, mosaic of where they are, that is unconstitutional. Now, that ruling has not yet been applied to flock cameras, but I'm telling you, it's coming. If it was isolated and random, it's totally legal. There is no expectation of privacy, but you also have a reasonable expectation that nobody is following. If somebody was following you around, taking pictures of you 24/7, that would be stalking, right? So there is a line that's crossed, and the line is crossed when it's a mosaic. 40 cameras in one city, that's a mosaic.
Andrew, got to get out of here, but thanks for hopping on this morning. Let's do it again soon.
Always good talking with you.
Andrew Sorrell, our state auditor. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Now, walls of history are cold and still, but they still smell the powder burning, and they probably always will. And on the old town square, under the barbershop pole, they set me up in the chair. Welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Wednesday morning. Joey Clark coming up in the next hour, so make sure you stay tuned for that. Let's see here. High Plains Drifter writes, problem is coach thinks it's already in the bag. It probably is, but like I said, you're building up your political capital. I think that's important to have a smashing success. So you show donors and you build the war chest up even more that they're getting something. And that you're, you know, that when you get to the new session next year, hey, I'm a very popular governor. Kay Ivey is the most popular governor in Alabama history, apparently. For some unknown reason, I guess, you know, maybe not as popular as Wallace was in his heyday, but she was able to do whatever she wanted, and she continues to do whatever she wants. She doesn't want to do a whole lot. Name takes away, waste time about Doug Jones being governor. I stand a better chance of being governor. I wouldn't say that. Ultra, intrigued by your thoughts yesterday. I researched AI migration data. You're onto something, and it's not good. AI is a value pick. Most are coming from neighborhoods like Florida and Georgia, and they come for work, retirement, and lower cost of living. The incoming workforce is college educated. That correlates with a left-leaning political view, about 57% Dem versus 43% Republican. The incoming retirees have lower net worth than the ones who can afford Florida. Net worth correlates with right-leaning political views. Bad news on both fronts. It's possible that most of our new neighbors, young and old, and are left of center. Are we doomed? Not doomed, just maybe deluded. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5.